morning and welcome to HR Examiner Radio. I'm your host, John Sumser, and we're coming to you today from beautiful downtown Occidental, California, where the roses are coming back for a second round and the redwoods are keeping it cool in the California summer. Today, we're going to spend some time with Crystal Miller. Crystal is the founder and CEO of Branded Strategies, which is a recruitment marketing firm in Dallas, Texas. Crystal has been a face of recruitment marketing and employment branding for the entire duration of the existence of the discipline. How are you, Crystal?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, great. So now you're an old veteran. Do you object to being called old?
No, I don't really care, but it's funny to me because I don't feel old. Well, that's not true. I feel old probably every morning. But, you know, in the terms of this industry, I still look to people with much more experience than I. So it's interesting to make that shift from newcomer to not so new.
Right. Wallflower. So tell us the story of the Crystal career.
You know, I think my story is unique, and I think everyone probably thinks theirs is, but it definitely wasn't a straight path. I don't know how unique it was, but it was a very windy path. I started in traditional marketing in 1996, database marketing, actually, for Wyndham Hotels, a subset of their conglomeration, and that was really interesting. And but it was a very little cog in a very, very big wheel, and I wanted to be a bigger cog. That has never gone away, So I started my own business when I was 19, and that was great until I got a divorce. And my ex-husband said, "You can have the business, or you can have the kids, but it doesn't really work to have both." Chose the kids. Never really going to regret that. I think that was absolutely the right call. But then I had a lot of time on my hands, so I thought I'd go be a doctor. And it turns out I don't like mucus. So the dean of the program said, "You know, you have business experience, you have education in marketing, and maybe you should go back to that because I don't see you in medicine. Take a semester. If you want to come back, I'll let you back in." So cool on my laurels for like a semester. And my then boyfriend said, "You know what? There's a career where you get paid to talk, and you should do that because you talk all the time. It's recruiting. Go check it out." So I did, and it turned out to be really, really well suited for me. I loved it. It had elements of marketing to it. It was helping people, you know, in a very positive way and helping business. This was great. But I noticed that it was really disorganized in terms of creating marketing campaigns and themes and storylines that were consistent. So you had all of these voices, and it just really confused candidates. So I started working on recruitment marketing in 2004, 2005, somewhere there. And that led into employer branding before it was even called that. I mean, nobody called it that. The first book, I think, came out the year that I started working in that vein. And it was a really exciting time. I left it for a couple of years to run HR, learned that was not for me. I have a lot of respect for people who run HR organizations, but it made me really miserable. So I went back into recruitment marketing and employer branding, and it's been a really good fit for me. So I work with companies to help them tell their stories in a way that makes sense, that helps improve their reputation or deal with reputational issues that they're facing in the marketplace and attract the right kind of candidates for them.
So step me through the simplest kind of job that you do. What's the bread and butter thing that you do?
So probably the simplest job I do is creating social recruiting strategies, right? So social recruiting is not a thing, and we really need to stop acting like it's a discipline. It's not. It's channel marketing. So I work with companies on creating campaigns for that particular channel or strategies for what they need to be doing to make the channel a little more effective, because right now a lot of companies don't understand social and what it's meant to do. And so they have very fuzzy metrics that make it hard to go and talk to the CFO. So the simplest job that I do is to create strategies that have metrics attached to them that a CFO can understand and appreciate.
So tell me the difference between one that a CFO can understand and one that a CFO can't understand. Give me an example.
And understand might be the wrong word. Appreciate might be the right word. But the one that they do understand is things that have actual quantifiable conversions to them. So they understand traffic, they understand applications, they understand referrals. You know, that the reach is another metric that they get, but they have to, you have to tie that to something else. What they often see when people are asking for budgets in these organizations are things like, well, we're raising brand awareness. Okay, well, what does brand awareness actually get you? And it's not to say that there's not a point to brand awareness. There is, but that can't be your whole point if you want finance to respect your budget request. So working on things like, we are trying to increase the number of our applications, drive traffic back to our website, do some predictive marketing by reaching out to these specific groups, and we're going to see how they respond to these messages. You know, what can we get from them? What is the customer conversion? So if you're in a B2C organization and you're trying to reach out to people, do they ultimately also convert to customer? How does it improve your reputation and net promoter score? There's a lot of metrics you can use that go beyond likes and Facebook shares. So it's
you're bringing sophistication and accountability to that process. Have you spent time looking at the sort of recruitment marketing platform people? Does that approach make sense to you, that recruitment marketing merits a platform?
So when you say that, are you talking like the Smashflies of the world?
Yeah, Smashfly, Broadbean.
Yeah, to some extent it does. I mean, at some point tech can get a little too much for their intended user, right? So there's some bells and whistles that really aren't needed that I think get pushed. So, you know, you try to get people into predictive analytics and predictive marketing. And, you know, I really am not a fan of Broadbean's latest offering, but I like Broadbean as a platform for companies. I think, you know, we're asking HR people to be marketers, and a lot of them are not. And so giving them the tools that they need to be able to do better recruitment marketing is great. I think that's a good thing. So I like Smashfly. I like Broadbean. I'm a fan of both of those platforms. But I think that we have to recognize where our audience is. You know, let's not try to teach our audience calculus when they barely grasp algebra. You know, I don't know. I think that we're getting a little ahead of ourselves in some of the technology that's offered.
Well, that's interesting. Can you peel that back another layer? What's overkill in that area look like? What's an example of the kind of overkill you're talking about?
So when we were at True London earlier this year, Broadbean was putting out, and Broadbean's the specific one that I was thinking of, they put out a new product, and I shouldn't have brought this up this early in the morning, because now I'm not going to remember all of the nuances to their product. They're going to come back and say, you don't understand. And for the record, I welcome that conversation. Talk to me about it. You know how to reach me, the one crystal everywhere. But when I was looking at their product, when they did the demo at True London, it was very much like, hey, we're going to give you the ability to make these predictive decisions based off of candidates that apply, but the way, you know, so that you can see based off of your applicant pool and the jobs that you have coming, like what you need to spend and where you need to spend it and how you need to spend it. But the data that came back was really elementary and I think oversimplified to the point where I don't know that it was accurate. And it was really clear that the user that would be using this wouldn't understand what it needed to have been. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
that was a lot. I'm sure that was a lot, and I got lost a little bit in it, because first you said it was overkill, and then you said it was too simple.
Well, it's overkill of technology, but because, like, I don't know that we need to get to predictive analytics and market. Well, no, that's not what I mean to say. I don't know that we need technology to try to predict what we need to do in certain areas. Like, it was jumping the gun. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, they had moved a couple steps past where the market is. And I'm not saying there's not a place for predictive analytics. I think predictive analytics is important with the right groups. But I don't know that I want to hand a recruiter technology that says, hey, this will help you better predict, hiring forecasts or something like that. You know what, John? I have not had enough coffee for this conversation, so I'm
okay. Great. Let's what you would find is I'm a big fan of that stuff. I like anything that introduces more accountability into
I think there's a difference, though, between accountability. You know what bothered me about it? It's just, if you're going to get into the area of predictive analytics, make the data that you get back mean something. And it really felt like big data for data's sake, right? What we really need is to better understand little data, right? We have a lot of little data that we could make a much, much better decisions around, and we don't utilize that. So rather than jump in this, you know, big data or predictive analytics game to say that you're in it, especially around employer branding and recruitment marketing, why not help people understand how to use the little data first, get them comfortable with making good decisions around that, and then move on? That's what I used to say.
This is always the challenge with new technology, isn't it? In order for it to be new, it has to do things that people aren't currently doing. And so you end up with new technology that shows you the path to the next generation of stuff. I mean, I think knowing that there's a sort of a chattering class who will criticize whatever technology comes out is a really important part of how technology gets better. You have to try stuff, and it's the people who try stuff and make a big enough effort so that there's something to correct.
I'm not knocking the fact that the technology exists. What I think can be improved, and it's not really just to criticize it for criticizing sake. What I think can be improved is the user pathway, taking people from where they are in their understanding and education of the area to where they need to be. And it feels like we are rushing in HR technology to get on this big data bandwagon that, to be fair, so is consumer marketing, but we're 10 years behind that, at least, like in our terms of understanding and practices. I don't think we're in the same place. And right now, you know, when you've got people lecturing in conferences about how to use your big data, and your big data is like all of your social graphs, like that's not what that means. Like we don't get it yet. So if you're gonna make that technology, make a roadmap that really helps your audience, that helps your buyers use it appropriately.
Right? Well, that's a very interesting critique. I don't know how you do what you described, but it certainly would be great if when you invented a car, the roads were instantaneously there, but that's not what usually happens.
I don't think it needs to be instantaneously there, but you know what? Products don't pop up overnight. I mean, well, maybe they do, but good products like these companies are putting out, they don't come up overnight. So hiring practitioners, you know, making sure that you have a nice cross-section of customers to focus, putting together foundational boards and panels of practitioners to ask questions and help yourself learn, you know, as the technology provider, where your audience is and how they need to be educated. Those are all good places to start.
Let's hop into recruitment marketing. What's the difference between strategy for a small company and for a big company? So you've worked with the smallest, you've worked with the biggest. What's the difference between a giant phone company and somebody you've never heard of in terms of employment branding?
So, I mean, some of it depends on budget, right? But I think the first step is proper expectations of what you want and what you need out of that channel. A lot of the companies that I talk to just want to be there because they feel like they should, right? Like, we need to be on social. To some extent, you know, having a presence is a good thing. It's where your candidates are. But you don't necessarily need to be in all of the places or in all three channels and, you know, just because everyone else is. So we sit down and we talk about expectations about what they want to get out of it, why they feel like they need to be there, what is their budget, to figure out what's realistic for them. Because there are more hurdles to being seen, than most of them revolve around in-platform advertising. So, you know, once we work through that and kind of figure out what's a realistic picture for them, then we look at what's your ongoing resources like. And I mean, in terms of people and being able to maintain this. And once we know what that is, we create storylines that help them hire on the channels where their talent happened to be. So, you know, for some companies, that's getting them really comfortable with the idea that, hey, you may need to be on Snapchat and create some Snapchat stories. And here's how we can best do that. And here's the employee advocates that we can work with. You know, let's make sure that your LinkedIn and your Glassdoor pages are up to snuff, you know, that kind of thing. But when you work with bigger companies, you're really working more on media placement, media buying, media budgets, LinkedIn tracking, not LinkedIn tracking, link tracking. You know, those are our areas where, I mean, tactically, it takes more time, but they have more resources. So, you know, that's part of what we look at. But it really starts in the same place. What are your goals? What are your goals? What are your resources? What are your timelines? What are your expectations? So I don't know if that changes that much by company size.
Okay, so I think you just said that there's not really a difference between being a small company and a large company when you're doing employment branding. Is that fair?
Where you start, there's not a lot of difference. Where you end, there's not a lot of difference. It's the stuff in the middle that's different, right? So, and that's all really based off of budget and resources.
Okay, so do you think you need a different employment brand for each job?
No, I don't. And that's why I think there's a difference between employer branding and recruitment marketing.
Okay, so help me with that. That sounds like a lot of fuss about nothing. If you have to have something different for each job, what you call it, why would that matter?
So employer branding, at least the way that I explain it, is the culmination of the promises and value that the employer, overarching promises and values that the employer offers, right? This goes over all of your job families. This is the employment experience brought to life. Job family specific marketing falls under recruitment marketing to me. So it's going to have elements of that same employer brand that all of the job families will have, but it's more specific to hiring initiatives, to specific candidate populations. It's a marketing campaign. It's really just a marketing campaign underneath a larger program.
So then I think what you just said is that branding is for the company as a whole and assumes that there's one giant culture, and marketing is job by job and is tactical. Is that right?
No, it's that's not right. It's all marketing. Employer branding in general is marketing, right? So it's types of marketing. It's just types of marketing campaigns. And who you're trying to reach. To me, recruitment marketing and job family marketing, it's more targeted. It does address things like subcultures that exist. And if you're geo-marketing, I mean, there is, when you look at culture, I think there is there are elements of cultures company culture that exists across board, across location, across job families. And then there are subcultures that exist within locations, within teams. I mean, I think to say that there's one homogenous culture is doing a massive disservice to an organization, because that's rarely the case. But there are flavors of leadership and elements of culture that will be, that you can see across all locations. And, you know, it will change the kind of candidate that you need to try to attract. It won't necessarily change all of the candidates that apply for you, right? Like, I think a big misnomer of employer branding is that you will do, you'll put together this program and you'll execute it, and now only the candidates that you want will apply. That's never going to be the case. To me, the importance of employer branding and recruitment marketing, a lot of it falls in getting certain kinds of people to not apply, to self-select out of your process by accurately reflecting who you are. And there's ways to do that without saying, you know, hey, we're, you know, this awful soul-crushing organization, and really focusing in on things like, you know, micromanagement, let's talk about that for a second. You know, if you have an organization that is really, that struggles with micromanagement, you don't want to talk to people about how they're going to be able to make autonomous decisions. Like, that's a bad story to tell, because it's not true, right? But if you can talk to people about how, you know, you will get a lot of guidance and you will get a lot of oversight and you will help, we will help you make the right decisions and improve your career, you know, you're attracting a different kind of personality in telling that story. Okay, telling so, people that really want wide areas of discretion in birth.
So how do you reconcile the fact that this is all marketing and branding with that thing that you just described, which is a need to be accurate in the representation of the underlying culture? It seems like in the final analysis, marketing and branding is about putting a good face on things, and transparency is something other than that. How do you reconcile those two things? Because you don't want to go out and say, boy, this is a micromanagement client. Stay away from here unless you want somebody to tell you what you're supposed to do every minute of every day.
Again, I think it's in how you say it, right? I mean, we've been saying things in this radio show where I say one thing and you say, oh, well, what you're really saying is this, right? So, and of course, mine's a little more flowery and yours is a little more cynical, and that's okay. Like, that's part of the fun of having these conversations. Marketing is a lot of the same thing, right? So you take a generalized concept, or you take a concept and you generalize it to the point that it's palatable while still being true. I can see Matt Charney and a half a dozen other people right now getting ready to skewer me, but that's marketing and that's okay. What's not okay is saying that you are something that you're not, right? So there's a difference. I can say that I'm fluffy and it means the exact same thing as saying I'm fat, but it sounds better. So, you know, it's probably shades of gray, but it's an important shade of gray for an organization. You know, you don't want to scare people off, but at the same time, you can't not say anything, if that makes sense. And you can't say that you are something that you're not. So we really do work on things like, how do you represent who you are and the struggles and challenges you're going through? And sometimes the challenges aren't things like we've got a bad culture. Sometimes we've got rapid growth. And with rapid growth comes chaos, and, you know, people get kind of stuck in the cracks or left in the cracks, and things get overlooked, and you got to work a lot of long hours. And there's ways to tell those stories as well. I think that there was a really interesting piece of recruitment marketing and employer branding that was put out last week, I believe, by Jennifer. Oh gosh, I don't remember her last group. Oh, Jenny Chenoweth with Real Self, when they were talking about Code Tuesday. And it's a really fun video. It's really neat. I really love it. It's a parody piece, but they're talking about working late nights and how they work off hours and how coders actually function and how it functions outside of our normal perceptions of 9 to 5. It's a great piece of marketing. And it doesn't say, hey, you've got this dream job where you're going to work 5 hours a day and everybody's gonna let you do whatever you want and all of this stuff. No, it's people that are proud of the work that they do, and they're working long hours and they're working off hours, and they have to go back and redo things. And sometimes deployments don't work and you have to do it again. And there's tight deadlines and you're accountable to your CTO. All of that is within that video. Those messages are there, and the right people will hear the things in between the lines of that song, if that makes sense.
Sure. So we have zoomed through our time together. It's been great. What should I have asked you?
What should you have asked me? Why? So that's a good question. Why bother with employer branding at all? If people will apply anyway, what does it matter?
That's the question
I don't hear asked a lot, but it's...
So why does it matter? Tell me why it matters.
Everyone has a story. Many companies are doing a very good job at learning to take control of that story so that they can get the right people involved in their process that may not have looked at them, that may not have applied. Really, to some extent, this does go back to passive candidate marketing. I mean, like, you don't necessarily need to spend a lot of money marketing the person that's going to apply to you anyway. But just like you don't need to spend a lot of money going out and trying to acquire customers that are already buying your product. But you do need to look at who isn't applying and why aren't they applying. And employer branding can help you address some of those things. But if you don't do it, here's what happens. You still have a story. You still have a reputation, and people will still talk about you. You just at that point no longer get a voice in that conversation. If you don't have a voice in that conversation, you can't in any way, shape, or form control your reputation. And that's sad. You know, and I kind of look at Amazon right now, and I mean, they do employer branding, but they're not as far along with it, I think, as they'd want to be. At least that's the last conversation I had with representatives of their organization. And, you know, that's true for most companies. So I don't fault them for that, right? But because maybe they're not. I mean, maybe if they had done more, maybe the conversations that are going on right now, where Jeff Bezos is on some news channel or some print thing saying, hey, this is not the Amazon that I know. This is not the Amazon that we recognize. You know, maybe that wouldn't need to be as big of a thing, because if there had been more out there from the employees, if there had been more out there from Amazon, you know, maybe he wouldn't need to have said that much. I don't know.
The Amazon employment branding story is something that people are going to talk about for years after this last weekend.
I think you're right.
It's the case study, and it seems to me that the New York Times article was maybe the single greatest employment branding story ever. What exactly would you do to have your company's employment culture described on the front page of the Sunday New York Times in 12 or 13,000 compelling words? But geez, you don't get that opportunity very often. And what they described was an environment that's not for everybody. And they were very clear that it was an environment that was not for everybody, and that if you weren't cut from a certain cloth, you'd rinse out of the environment. It isn't any different than how the Navy SEALs have to get their employment brand together, because it's not for everybody. And so I think it was a home run. I think it clearly tells you who you need to be if you want to go to work for that company in a way that nobody's ever done before.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I can see why it strikes a nerve in a negative way with the company. I mean, nobody wants to hear that their organization is soul crushing. But I also think it's a really interesting example of how little things matter, right? So like some of these micro events that, you know, companies think, oh, it doesn't matter if one or two bad things happen. And I'm making a sweeping generalization, but you know, some of those stories, like the woman that was sent on a business trip the day after she miscarried twins and told that maybe it wasn't the right organization for her if she was trying to have a family. You know, that's not necessarily, that's the subculture at work, right? But once those things get out, that's a reputational marketing issue that has to be addressed. And I'm, you know, like I feel for the people in the Amazon employment branding area and in their PR, because they've got some work to do. But at the same time, what a fascinating challenge! Like what a really interesting project on trying to turn those perceptions around. But you're right in terms of the overarching, here's who we need to survive in this organization. And if I were them, I'd embrace that. I would embrace that and say, yep, we are a high performing organization. And it's almost like GE, right? How GE used to be. So I think it's a neat challenge, but I also think it speaks to the need for consistent employment branding and recruitment marketing messages if you want to make sure that you're being portrayed as close to as how you see yourself, as how you actually are, as possible.
Very cool. So is there anything you'd like to make sure the people in the audience take away? What do they need to remember from this conversation?
There's no one perfect path to the right employer branding or recruitment marketing. There's no one way to do it. There's a lot of different ways that you can get to a good end result, but you got to do something, and you need to start by understanding who your organization is and what you can actually do before you put together a plan. Once you put together a plan and you go out there and you botch it, it's so much harder to redo something than it is to sit down and do it right the first time.
That's good advice. So, Crystal, please reintroduce yourself and tell people how to get a hold of you.
I am Crystal Miller, sans coffee. And you can get a hold of me on the internet pretty much anywhere at THEONECRYSTAL. My company is Branded Strategies, and you can reach that at brandedstrategies.com.
Well, thanks very much, Crystal. It's been great having you on the show today, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Hope you have a great week. Thanks again.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.